It's time for Local Motion on your Mountain Grown Community Radio, KVNF. I'm today's host, Taya J. In December of 1997, Julia Hill climbed a 1,000-year-old sequoia tree with the intent of doing a 2-week tree sit in an effort to protect Northern California's ancient forests from logging. 2 years later, Julia Butterfly Hill finally came down. Her story inspired not only the world, but writers and poets, musicians and documentarians. One filmmaker who was inspired by Julia's story was Lou Angelo. On Friday, August 2nd, the Paradise Theater in Paonia will screen Lou's film, Adventures in Tree Sitting. This event is a fundraiser for the Western Slope Conservation Center. The film will be followed by a Q&A with Lou Angelo and Paonia resident Jed Justison, the film's sound designer. For these storytellers, Julia's experience is as relevant now as it was when they first set out to tell her story 25 years ago. Today on Local Motion, I'm joined by Jed Justison, sitting in as my co-host, as we chat with none other than Julia Butterfly Hill. We hope that you enjoy. Julia Butterfly Hill, thank you so much for joining us on the KVNF airwaves. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm honored and happy to be with you.
I'm going to let Jed start out with a question for you today. Get the ball rolling for us, Jed.
Sure. Hi, Julia. I was the music supervisor on Adventures in Tree Sitting. And
oh, wow.
I got to see all the footage, work with the editor. You had a very profound effect on me just watching your footage, listening to your words. You said that Luna taught you so much. What is the biggest lesson you learned since you've come down 25 years ago?
I'm one of those people that I can't like stick something into the biggest and the smallest and these kind of things. But I think one of the core pieces that I learned while in Luna and have continued to learn from since coming down from Luna is that the essence of who I want to be, the essence of how I want to serve, the essence of how I want to learn is through the lens of love. And while I was in Luna, it was like trying to teach people about how it's not just like an airy-fairy idea, that actually love has been the hardest teacher I've ever had to take on. Because there's a lot of times when love is the last thing I want to speak from or want to act from. And in the world today, with so much going wrong, it's so easy to go directly to anger or go directly to hatred. But those are really just coping mechanisms to cover up the fact that what we care about is dying and suffering, and it causes us hurt. And so if we can go underneath that, what we tap into is our love. And I have just continued to do my best to keep that love at the core of what I do. And so I always tell people that like my life's mission is to try and live a life of love in action.
Love in action. That's so important. So nicely said. Julia, I'm curious. I think that it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the state of the world, especially as an empath, especially as someone who cares really deeply. And I also think it's really easy to fall into almost an apathetic place or a place of just feeling like so overwhelmed that you don't know where to begin. And I think that something that your story of the time spent in Luna taught me was this reminder to act before it's too late. And I'm wondering what you say to people to motivate us to get involved before it's too late.
I remind people that people will say, well, I don't know what to do or I don't know how to do it. And I say, well, don't let that stop you. Because when I got involved, I came from a business background. I didn't come from an activist background. I wasn't allowed to watch television growing up. And then I had to learn how to do media. I mean, there was so much that I didn't know how to do that I just had to learn while I was doing it. And so I tell people, don't let the fact that you think you don't know how to do something stop you from doing it anyway. I give examples of like, if you want to see what's around the bend in a road, you have to head in that direction. in order to see it. So just head in the direction of what you care about and trust that what you need to learn and the people you need to meet are going to show up along the path. It's not always going to be easy. I don't pretend that. But I do know that the resources we need will show up if we commit ourselves to taking those steps. The other thing is that I have had a lot of physical and health challenges since coming down, especially since 2014. And I remind people that we need to take care of the personal ecology and the community ecology while we work on the external ecology as well. And that includes making sure that we eat healthy, that we have some kind of healthy practice, whether it's going on walks, doing yoga, meditation, something that takes care of this vessel. I see so much of people, they get committed to being in service in the world and there's so much going wrong that then their personal ecology falls apart. So making sure to take care of this vessel that we've been given and taking care of one another in this world of being active in the world. I was raised with a preacher for a father, and one of the things that churches do well is they take care of one another. And I'm not a person who goes to church anymore. I'm not a person who ascribes to that particular belief anymore. But one of the things I saw that they did well, if you're sick, someone brings you soup. If someone in your family passes away, the community of in the church rallies around to make sure you are taken care of during that process of grief and loss. And so making sure that while we're working on these bigger issues in the world, we're taking care of the personal ecology and the communal ecology. And that uplifts us, it restores us, and it gives us the energy to continue on even when it feels so difficult and overwhelming.
This question kind of follows up on that. There's this sort of idea of you as a quote-unquote superhero, something that was certainly perpetuated by the media when you were spending time in Luna. And I think you said yourself that you're not a superhero. You were just someone who was, you weren't doing something that was an unattainable goal. You were just trying to make the world a better place. And I think that's an important reminder that we can all, as you say, like you have to go down the road to see what's around the bend. We can all take steps to make the world a better place if we feel so inspired to. How do you respond to that?
I always remind people that, like, yes, what I did was really freaking difficult. To this day, I still can't believe I did it. Like when people say, I can't believe you did that. I'm like, well, neither can I. It's been 25 years. But I remind people too that, like, I could not have done what I did and been a part of a successful action. To this day, it's still a story that spreads around the world, inspiring and motivating people. And that's only because of the power of team. And that includes the people whose skill was a hike up and down that mountain. I joke that part of the reason I stayed in the tree for that long was because I didn't want to have to hike up that mountain again. So there were people on my team who were like, yeah, bring the mountain on. I was like, oh God, don't let me climb that mountain again. And then there were people who were in the office answering the phones, answering the emails, sending out the press releases, following up on the press releases. People forget that, like, in order to get something out into the media, it's a different time now than it was then. Now people can do things from their phones. Back then, you had to, like, send something out in an email, follow up with the fax, get on the phone, follow up with a phone call just to get the media to happen. It wasn't happening just because the girl was sitting in a tree. There was core people on the team that wasn't there in the beginning, but that developed over time. And once we had that core thing, that core team, excuse me, things completely transformed in that action. And so I remind people, every person is important on the team. You may not be the one designed to be the really big action like I did, but there's a role for you on the team, and every role is important and needed, because without each person stepping up in their role and seeing their role as important and powerful, then a part of that team starts to crumble, and then the whole effort does not have the same power.
So important. And I think about that a lot. You know, not everybody is bold in the way that they advocate. Not everybody is a loud activist. Some people are quiet activists. And how do we create space, and how do we foster a community that supports every type of participant in any kind of movement or change? How do we support the people who maybe aren't as outspoken so that we can also support the people who are outspoken?
So important, yes.
Yeah. You mentioned the media, and I want to talk a little bit about in the frenzy, the sort of media frenzy. It took a while to catch, and then it seems like once it caught, they were on it. And I wonder in the frenzy of the time that you were up in Luna, but in particular, once you got down in that kind of frenzy, what were the ways that you were maintaining sort of your sense of self and your reminder of why you were doing or why you had done what you'd done?
I think the gift that came to me was actually through feeling gut punched and heartbroken, because I was so naive, and the media would spend an hour or two with me, and then I saw what they did with what I gave them, and I was mortified. And I would give my heart and my soul, and then they'd ask me questions like, how do you cook? What do you eat? How do you go to the bathroom? The same things people still ask to this day. And I would answer it thinking I was just giving them the back information, and they would literally use my answer to the daily life as a quote in the article. And I was devastated. I would be like, I can't, how could they do that to me? And then I had to learn. I had to educate myself and figure out, okay, truthfully, if they're going to use me, I'm going to use them. Let's be honest about this relationship. And so I had to get wise and smarter on how I was going to use them, and be like, okay, I'm going to do my best to make sure that I only give them my best for them to use. And they're still going to do what they're going to do with it. People don't realize, like, even positive media is still the lens of whomever is interviewing me and whoever's producing it and all of those things. So it's still a piece of me through the lens of someone or someone's else. And then the other thing was that once it became big, everybody had an opinion and they were all different. And at first I was trying to do everything right. And then I started feeling like I was going crazy. And I realized it was because I can't be everything to everybody. And it made me really go internal and say, okay, who am I inside? Who do I want to be? I'm going to make mistakes no matter what I do. And so I'd rather make mistakes trying to be true to myself than make mistakes trying to be everything to everyone. And that actually made me get more clear on myself and more grounded in myself. All of those people pulling at me and trying to tell me what I should be saying or doing or thinking. Some people thought I should stay up until all the redwoods were saved and all the world's forests were saved. And other people thought they should cut the tree out from underneath me and just kill me in it. And every thought in between. And so it really forced me to delve in deep and say, I have to figure out who I am in my depths, and it will start to shape and form as I grow through this experience. But I have to figure out who I am at my core, because everything else is 98% perception and 2% is me. And I have to be responsible for me. And then that other part I can't let in, even if it's positive, because if I let in all the positive things people have said about me, my ego would be so huge. It's like if someone is seeing something positive in me, I tell people, I'm so glad I can be a mirror to reflect to you the goodness in you, because that is so important in our world. But it's still 2% me, 98% the reflection.
Do you feel like who you were at your core, like that sense of self that you found, is the same now as it was then?
My core is still the same, but just like a caterpillar transforms into a butterfly and it has to liquefy in the process. Holy cow. The liquefaction I've had to go through over and over again, not just since I was in the tree, but since coming down, it's been multiple times that I've had to liquefy. But the core is still there. How I've transformed over time has shifted and changed every time I've had to go through the liquefaction process. But that caterpillar is still in the butterfly after the liquefaction process. It just transforms. And so I've had to go through multiple liquefaction processes and transforming myself over and over. But the core is still solid. I want to be a person who lives my life in service. I want to be a person who does my best to create more good than harm. I want to be a person who lives through love. And when I make mistakes, because I do and I will, I want to be honest enough to own them and to make right what I can and to promise to do better and commit to doing better when I do make those mistakes.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Taya Jay, joined today by co-host Jed Justison. Today we are chatting with Julia Butterfly Hill about her time spent living in the 180-foot-tall redwood tree Luna. Julia remains to this day an outspoken and passionate advocate for saving our planet.
Julia, our modern world is so full of conveniences that suck up resources and energy. Do you have a strategy for living life free of these distractions?
It's a constant dance in our world because there's no such thing as a perfect choice. I wish there was, because I'm clearly the kind of person who would go the extra mile to make that perfect choice. But there is no perfect choice. So it's really just a trying to figure out what is the best choice I can make in every moment. And also being aware of how the world leans in the direction of convenience and comfort, but then being aware of the actual impact that that makes on the planet, the impact that makes on future generations. And what I choose to do with my life is to, with that idea of love, is I ask myself, well, what would love have me do? What would love have me buy? What would love have me not buy? And if I want to buy something, I try and take a few beats before I buy it and make sure, is this something I really need? Is there a place I could get this that would be better, a better place? All these kind of things that just love has me shift and reframe the way I think about things. And there's not a perfect choice. But one of the things that happened is when I went on tour after I came down, I averaged about 200 events a year for 15 years straight. 250 events, I think, actually. I've lost track. It was so, needless to say, it was a lot. And I found myself falling into that trap of buying things for ease because I was going nonstop. But then I kind of had an awakening, because while I was in Luna, I realized every paper cup is a tree. Every plastic litter to-go container is petroleum that's polluting the planet and the communities that it's being drilled out of, and polluting future generations' lives. Like every plastic bag, every plastic utensil, all of these things are the ways that we're trashing our planet, trashing and polluting our own bodies and future generations. And it just completely transformed the way I related and interrelated with this planet. But when I got so busy on tours, I started making choices out of convenience. And then I woke up to it and said, I have to change this. I don't know how much I can change because I'm on tour. And I was touring across the country when everybody else who was famous was flying from one coast to the other. I was touring across the country, going through the heartland, going through places where all there was almost nothing when it comes to conscious choices. But I was like, I have to figure out a way. And so I actually carried all my own trash around for a month on tour. And even my recycling, because it is massive corporations that poured millions into the recycling campaign because they want us to only think about recycling, because then we can buy more and appease our guilt. And it's reduce, reuse, recycle. It's not recycle, recycle, recycle. So I carried around my own recycling and my own trash on tour for an entire month. And some of those dates I had to fly to. I tried to do as many by car and train and bus as I could, but some I had to fly to. And I would be going through the security line with my trash and my recycling and having to send it through the security x-ray machine. And they'd be like pulling me over and saying, excuse me, what is this? And I'd be like, it's my trash and my recycling. And they'd be like, ma'am, there's bins right over there. And I would say, yes, I understand, but I'm doing a test on myself to see how much trash and recycling I'm creating, because I'm committed to doing less. So I've made a campaign to carry it around for a month so that I can learn what I'm doing so I can do better. And it would be such funny and fun conversation. Some people would get angry, some would laugh, some would be like, that's such a cool idea, I'm going to do that. And so I did it for a month. And then I started looking at how, even on tour, I could reduce my impact. And it shifted my awareness because I was like, I know I can do better than this. And so after carrying it around for an entire month, I realized the things that I could shift. And I could not shift all of it, but I paid attention to what I could shift. And I drastically reduced even what I was creating on tour.
Wow, that's incredible. Amazing. I want to come back to talking about Luna for a minute. I've heard you say that Luna gave you literal perspective, being able to see everything that we stand for and struggle for. Do you ever have moments where you have the instinct to get up above the fray again in order to sort of get that clarity? And what are the ways that you do that?
Yes, those of us who were tree sitting at the time jokingly called it Grounds disease. And so it was just kind of like trying to remember when I get caught up in Grounds disease. And I try and just like with my thoughts and my memory and with my cellular memory, even kind of project myself back up there so I can get a vantage point on when I'm getting all scrambled. But I also have tools like different practices. I used to have a full yoga and meditation practice, but some of my challenges are that I found out I have a disease now that is making all my ligaments tear and dislocate and my joints dislocate and sublux. So I can't even do that anymore. And I developed severe tinnitus. So I have what feels like a dentist drilling in my head 24/7. So I even had to change my meditation practice. I mean, talk about the storms of life. It's been challenging. But there's those kind of practices that allow us to get out of Grounds disease, the scrambling around craziness, and lift our consciousness out of it so that we can have that kind of elevated perspective and we can get out of the hustle bustle crazy of our mind and our life and breathe and remember that there's so much more to life than all that hustle and bustle. And so I encourage people, like, if you're like me now, like, I can't even climb trees anymore because my thumbs and my wrists sublux and dislocate. I literally can't even climb trees anymore. And so I tell people, like, if you can't climb a tree and you can't climb a mountain, you can't climb a hill, find a practice. And sometimes it's really challenging because we're almost addicted to it now with all the phones and iPads and all this technology. People are so used to being constantly stimulated that taking time to calm that down upsets people and aggravates them and they don't even know what to do. And it's like, just sit with that being uncomfortable for a while. And just breathe. And if you need to, when I first started meditating, I needed a practice with a word. And so I tell people, if you need to, find a word or two that you focus on in the breath in and the breath out that calms your mind and your heart and your spirit and your nervous system down. And if you can only commit to 2 minutes in the morning and 2 minutes at night, commit to that and then get it to 5 minutes and then get it to 10 minutes. But like start at a place you can commit to, because sometimes people will say, well, I'm going to do a big thing. And then they do it for like a week and give up. So like pick something you can actually commit to and stick with. And then you start to feel the benefits and then do it a little longer and find ways of that being able to pull out of the Grounds disease and get that perspective of our self-awareness. And it calms the nervous system too. So it has a physiological benefit as well that allows us to gain perspective even when we're triggered and upset and overwhelmed.
So nicely said. So nicely said. Grounds disease. I love it. And I appreciate, Julia, that you bring up working with limitations, because everybody has certain limitations, right? And it's easy to think, oh, yeah, well, I can't sit and therefore, you know, I can't sit cross-legged on the floor and therefore I can't meditate, or I can't, you know, whatever it may be. We have all of these like imposed limitations and physical and emotional limitations. And I love the way you talk about getting creative with how to approach it, that it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means that you have to rethink the way that you do it.
Exactly.
Julia, are you still hopeful for the health of the planet?
The planet's going to be fine. It's the humans that are a mess. The challenge is that we as human beings have forgotten that that we are part of it. This is our relative, all of the life on this planet. And I feel like all the life in the cosmos is our relative, like thinking beyond just the planet. What I started saying in Luna is we are all ancestors of the future. And if we thought about ourselves like that, how might our lives feel different? How might we start leading our lives different? How might we start feeling our relationship to this earth and one another in a different way? And I am creating that future. I am becoming an ancestor of the future by how I'm choosing to live the life that I have been given.
Ancestor of the future. I love it.
I love it. Yeah.
Do you have any advice for people that want to dedicate their time and energy to activism in a practical sense?
Well, the first thing that I remind people is that I actually have a little bit of a challenge with the word activist and activism, and truly a challenge with any word that ends in ist or ism, because they were first started as a way for us to understand things, but now they've gotten to the point where they say you're either that or you're not that. And they've actually, any word that ends in the ist or ism now is a disconnector instead of a connector. And so people hear the word activist or activism and they think, well, you're either climbing a tree or locking down to a bulldozer or something like that, or you're not. But I remind people that every time we make a choice, because it doesn't happen in a vacuum, every single choice we make affects the world and our planet and future generations. It is actually scientifically impossible to make no difference and to have no impact. And so 7 billion of us are activists, whether we recognize it or not, because we are actively changing the world with every choice that we make. And so then it becomes about, do I want to become a conscious activist or an unconscious activist? Because either way, we're actively changing the world. And so I encourage people then from that place, when people come up to me and say, oh my gosh, I'm so inspired by what you've done with your life. What should I do? I always tell people, start with what you love. If you're an artist, use art as the way to make a difference. If you love food like I do, use, like, shift the way we relate to food, support local farmers, get involved in the campaigns against pesticides, like whatever it is that you love, find a way to serve from there, because that way, when things get intense, and they are intense, and when the storms of life blow, that love is like what keeps the embers going so that the fire doesn't go out.
Our final question is from Hannah Stevens. She's the executive director of the Western Slope Conservation Center. Hannah asks, how can we help more people connect to nature in meaningful ways while at the same time not, quote, loving nature to death?
Oh, real. For me, it really goes back to that point of helping people feel the connection. So that nature isn't something to just go do for the vacation or the holiday or the weekend getaway, but rather that if I'm going to experience kayaking on the river or climbing a mountain or rock climbing or hiking in the forest, whatever it may be, that I'm going out recognizing that I'm interacting with this being that I'm related to. I'm going to step and walk differently. I'm going to notice things differently. I'm going to see, is there some way I can contribute and make this place better before I leave? Every time I go to the beach anywhere, because I'm a water baby, I love water. I'm known for the trees, but I'm a water baby. I need to be near water or in the water as much as possible. And every time I go to the beach, I bring a little plastic bag and I'm picking up every little piece of trash off that beach and putting it in the plastic bag so that when I leave, I've left it a little better than when I arrived. Like whatever it may be, when we teach people, even the word nature is weird because that word immediately makes it like we're separate from. So we don't actually have a word in the English language that helps us relate to this planet that we are actually a part of. I tell people the biggest challenge is we become disconnected from the nature of our human nature. And so it's like, how do we, as we remind people of the importance and the beauty and the magic of this planet that we're so blessed to live on and with and be a part of, how do we also help build that sense of relatedness So it's not just something to experience, but it's something to know that we're part of and one with.
Julia, thank you so much. Anything you feel like we missed that feels important?
No, I just want to say that thank you so much to Community Radio, and thank you so much to everyone who's part of the fundraiser and a part of supporting community, because community is where it's at. As bigger things start to crumble, it's where we invest our time, our energy, our money, our hearts. That's what's going to grow. And I believe in that investment and the power of that investment. So I'm really happy and blessed to have been a part of this with you today. And I want to thank everyone who's a part of supporting Community Radio and supporting community as a whole.
Julia, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. It's such an honor.
Thank you.
That was Julia Butterfly Hill. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Taya Jay. Reminder to our listeners, the Paradise Theater in Paonia will screen a film about Julia, Adventures in Tree Sitting, this Friday, August 2nd, beginning at 7 p.m. This event is open to the public. Donations will go to benefit the Western Slope Conservation Center. More information can be found at paradiseofpaonia.com. For more Local Motion programming, you can visit our website, kvnf.org. Thanks as always for listening.